Houston standing by, over.
Jeremy and Joe continues now
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
From the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at the St. Arnold Beer Garden, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Live at St. Arnold for opening day, national holiday opening day is. And then, oh, just on top of that, you got a little Sweet 16 basketball down the road. Fun doubleheader coming up tonight.
Can't wait.
Nebraska and Iowa.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Texas game.
And then Houston and Illinois. We'll be joined by Brian Barnhart, Illinois radio play-by-play guy, coming up in 15 minutes. Do you have a feel on the Nebraska-Iowa game?
I like Nebraska just because I like Hoiberg. Like, I am a fan. So I lean Nebraska in this one. I did see some Iowa fans here earlier, though.
Yeah.
They're getting their pregame going already, which
yeah,
I don't blame them.
I rode down the elevator with an Iowa fan.
How was the mix downtown?
It was. It's a pretty diverse city, Brian. No, it was a good mix. I saw a little bit of everything. More U of H fans. But, I mean, it's still kind of early for the games, though, right?
Sure. Yeah,
the games don't start until 6:20 or whatever. I was at the Toyota Center from about 1:45 to about 2:30. So there still wasn't a whole lot of foot traffic there. Now, where we're staying downtown, there are Astro fans all over the place.
Oh, I'm sure.
All over the place. So it's more baseball still. But, yeah, there's a lot of people. A lot of people in the city today. It's great. And the weather's good, right?
Like, it's a perfect day.
Sunny.
For this.
We're here underneath the outside the beer garden, which has the shade. It has the fan. It feels perfect right now.
Yeah, this is
perfect.
A great day for opening day.
The only slight issue I have.
What's that?
Is I can't have a cold beer.
Well, yeah, because you got to work tonight.
Can't have a cold beer.
Yeah.
Which, I'm just salivating over here. Like Pavlov's dog with the St. Arnold beer.
Brian said they've got great root beer.
Oh, I might try a root
beer. Great orange soda.
I'm more of a root beer guy. I might get a root beer, actually.
Yeah.
Root beer's great.
Yeah.
Root beer's great.
Puts a little hair on your chest,
Have you ever had the alcoholic or alcohol?
I think
root
it's
beer?
Called spiked root beer.
Spiked, whatever.
Yeah.
I know. Joe's dumb. I get it. it's so good.
No, it's, yeah. Yeah.
You went to Joe's dumb really quick. Joe's becoming very defeatist.
Here's the
thing. I know. I'm dumb. Sorry.
I can't get yesterday out of my head, guys. Like, yesterday was an all time bad day.
Did that ruin you?
It makes me feel ruined.
You said you were going to tell your wife about it.
I did
what
tell
was the
her.
Reaction?
She was just embarrassed. I said I texted her during the show, and I was like, "Hey, we need to go out to dinner tonight." She goes, "What's going on?" I was like, "Had a bad day. Need a bottle of wine to help me feel a
How
little better."
How much did you let Dana have?
She had half.
Okay, I thought you were going to take three quarters of that.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if your half is different than her half.
It is, yeah.
That's what I'm wondering.
It is different.
Junkie says Chandler Rome is softer than baby poop emoji. Another junkie, you guys should take it up a half notch and just start doing play-by-play of the Astros game until 790 sends you a cease and desist. No.
They're already probably in a bad mood today. It's fine. We can leave them alone.
Why do you think they're in a bad mood?
Because Blum was on our station. Jeff Blum, great guest on Dell's show.
He doesn't work for 790.
No, he kind of used to.
He doesn't anymore?
No.
He doesn't do the live hits with him?
Nope. He's free agent.
I think I'm on 790 tonight, actually.
Probably are.
I think they moved the game over.
Yeah,
because Texas is on, 740?
Yeah.
950?
Or 950.
Yeah, we're normally on 950. We're on 790 tonight.
Know your teammates.
What's that?
I said know your teammates, but Brian is a no ball. But I think we put a YouTube video up today with Dell and Blum. It was awesome to have him here. It was great.
Yeah. Awesome time. So what is worst and best case scenario for this Astros pitching staff, Joe? Because this is I like the pitching staff, but I'm also willing to admit that there's a lot of unknown with this pitching staff. Who knows what Emi does in America? Who knows what Burrows does as, second real year as a starting pitcher in the big leagues and taking a step up, right, with the Astros over the Pirates? What does Christian Javier bounce back look like? Does Lance McCullers have a bounce back? Do we eventually see Eric Geddy in this rotation? Who knows? Do we eventually see Ryan Weiss in this rotation? Who knows? So I do think that there is a wide range of results, more than normal, for this team. Like years past, you can kind of predict what's going to happen. Framber Valdez is going to give you 190 innings, sub 3.5 ERA, Hunter Brown taking that next level. So you kind of had a little better feel and predictability of what the Astros pitching staff rotation was going to look like. This year, it's very uncertain. It has a chance to be good, but I also think that the worst case could be pretty stinking bad.
Yeah, I think it has a chance to be great, to be honest with you. Ooh. Like what we've seen from Burrows and Emi in spring, I think you can get to the playoffs and say, if you're in a three-game series, five-game series, whatever it is, and say you feel confident going Emi, Burrows, obviously with Hunter Brown starting first, but feel confident in all three of those guys that they can win you a playoff game. There's also the scenario where you go, I really hope Emi opts out of that contract and tries to get more money elsewhere, even though he was not that good for the Astros.
That's unlikely.
It feels unlikely, right? So you're going to be begging him to opt out of his contract, which is not going to happen if he's bad. That Lance McCullers falls apart. That Spencer Arrighetti, if he has to come up and replace McCullers at some point then, isn't the guy we thought he was going to be, you know, 2 years ago at this point. I think there is a really high, you know, top 10 rotation ceiling. I think there's also a bottom 10 floor. Like where like they it can really range on what this rotation can look like. It probably just ends up right in the middle where, you know, one guy's good, one guy's bad, you know, but can you get a good Javier and a good McCullers and you might have the best rotation in baseball, honestly.
I think fell. That's kind of where I stand.
I don't know if your cord's going to go that far.
I'm agile. Okay. I'm agile. I'm like a Chester cat.
I was worried about you picking that up with mommy's wrist.
Well, I use my left.
Good call.
Strategic on the usage of my hands. My wrist, mommy's wrist, though, I know the junkies have been like, you know, they've been clamoring to know what my recovery process has been
care.
Like. Because I've been using that arthritis cream, and I got inflammation pills. The recovery's been good. I'm starting to feel like my old self a little bit.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, Astros. Like I think the top end ceiling is okay. Hunter Brown is going to be Cy Young contender, ace, not an ace. That debate, don't really care. But like he can be a top three Cy Young guy again. He did it last year, so obviously that's his upward ceiling. Maybe Emi just comes to America and he's really, really good, right? He turns into a number, not like an ace guy, not a Cy Young guy, but maybe he's a top 20 Cy Young guy. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's an under 3.5 ERA guy where you're not necessarily getting the innings of Fromber, but you're replacing the ERA of Fromber. Maybe Burrows is going to be kind of that same mold. I think can't handle this little 5-mile-per-hour breeze over here. Where he's kind of in that same mold. Maybe he can be an Emi, where he kind of graduates to a number two starter caliber. And then Javier McCullers, like, they don't need to be nuts, but they just need to be competent, right? That gives you a pretty good starting five.
Yeah.
And then Arrighetti you can throw in the mix. Who knows about why starting the year in the bullpen. So that's best-case scenario. Now, worst-case scenario, which I do think is in play, again, I think it's a wide range because of the relatively unknown of these starting pitchers. What if Mike Burrows is just who he was last year at Pittsburgh, where he's a, you know, 4-ish ERA guy, but he can't even get out of the fifth inning?
That's a problem.
What if Emi doesn't translate to America? There's been a lot of pitchers that have come from that side of the country, that side of the earth, that have not been able to really establish themselves in Major League Baseball. So that is in play. What if Christian Javier can never get the induced vertical break again, and it's living at 17, and he's throwing 91, and he's getting shelled? That's in play. What if Lance McCullers looks like what Lance McCullers looked like last year? That's in play. So, like, that's why the range of possibilities are very, very high. And, look, I understand it's opening day and we're all optimistic and we're all hopeful, and I hope that that is, you know, more positive than negative. I just think we have to also understand how it can turn. And if worst-case scenario, or if it's a little closer to worst-case scenario, the trickle-down effect of what that can do to your bullpen, too, with always taxed, always, you know, having to throw tons of innings. Now it has the trickle-down effect where your bullpen's terrible, too.
Yeah, I was on a Inside the Icebox, the OG Inside the Icebox.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
We dropped that on YouTube today, and it airs on radio tomorrow as Carlos Correa flies out with bases loaded. How do you feel like this entire season with Emi is going to be kind of a roller coaster about his contract, of where people are, I cannot believe they didn't just lock him up, and then the next start is, how do they give him these opt-outs when he's just going to stay here because he's bad?
No, I think it was the only way they could get it done.
Which is weird, because a couple of these Japanese guys this year just came in way lower than expected. I like the idea of the opt-outs, but I hope he's opting out because he's awesome. That's my
well,
biggest
yeah.
hope for this season.
Yeah.
Is that he's incredible. It's like when we used to talk about Bobby Slowick, right? About if Bobby gets a head coaching job, you got a new OC. Like it's a problem, but it's a great problem to have. I hope we're having that problem with Emi this year, but he's the one that to me is, when you talk about floor versus ceiling, he might be the guy that swings it the most in the positive direction.
See, I think he could be Burrows.
You think it's Burrows?
I think they're, like, in the same tier.
Sure.
Like, Lance and Javier, my hope is just that they, like, stay in the rotation, right? Like, they can be decent back into the rotation guys where you're not, like, searching in AAA. Like, hey, Colton Gordon, like, can you be better than Christian Javier? Like, I don't want to get to the spot where they're, like, you can't afford to pitch them anymore, which is likely. I mean, you got there last year with McCullers. Mm-hmm. Lance McCullers was unpitchable last year, and they were creating injuries for him. Surprised he didn't get mommy's wrist. Christian Javier became pretty close to being unpitchable late last season. So the goal for them, my goal for them, is that, and I know it's not their goal, but it's my goal for them. If they're just competent Major League Baseball starters in the four and the fifth spot, great. And I know this isn't the exact order, but the exact order is overrated anyways. But those guys, I just want to, you know, keep their head above water, stay in the rotation. Whereas Burrows and Emi, I'm looking for, can one of these guys develop into your number two? Can whoever's not, you know, developing into the number two, can he close out what is a very good starting pitcher trio? I think it's possible, but I think that this time of year we look, you know, we probably look very much at the most optimistic scenario. We probably gloss over the other, you know, range of it being not as optimistic.
Yeah, I think the other part with what you're just talking about there is, if I had to pick one guy to fall apart and say you have to remove him from the rotation, I would prefer it to be McCullers because his contract is up at the end of the season, where Javier is locked in for, what, two more years after this? So
I think it's one more year.
Oh, no, I think you're right. It's, you need Javier to be what he was. You don't have to have him, you know, leading a no-hitter like he was in the World Series, but I used to be Christian Javier's biggest fan when he really only had two pitches. And we saw that third pitch get brought into the game a little bit last year, but it's really that it's that rising fastball that has been the problem for him recently that is the biggest question. And he, you know, if he's a problem this year, it raises a lot of questions about just like the future of the Astros rotation.
He's the new McCullers, right? Where he's like counting down the clock for his contract to expire. Now, and to be fair to Javier, his stuff was a little bit better in his last spring training start. His velo was up a little bit, up a tick or two. The IVB was up a tick or two, which, okay, you know, maybe he's trending in the right direction. My hope for them is just that they're competent big league starters. And look, maybe just one of them, right? And you're right, more Javier than McCullers, because maybe Eric Geddy can be that competent starter.
Sure.
Maybe Weiss can be that competent starter. So your hope is that your top three is for sure, you know, Hunter Brown, Burrows, Emi, and you can count on them for 30 starts of the season. And then you're searching for two other guys that can be competent. Javier McCullers will get the first crack at it. Eric Geddy is going to be the sixth man of the rotation. Ryan Weiss can go into games. And then you got some guys down in AAA that, you know, you can count on for a spot start here and there. You know, Jason Alexander still in this organization. Colton Gordon still in this organization. J.P. Francis still in this organization. You expect to get Ronel Blanco back this year. You expect to get Hayden Wesneski back this year. So you have some options. They're just no guarantees.
We got Lolo, too. I said that.
That's
bad.
Right. You lower.
Where he could be an option for you this year too.
He walks so many. I think eventually he's going to be a reliever.
That makes sense.
I just think his control is not good enough to be a starter in baseball.
If you thought that now and you were Dana Brown, would you make that transition earlier?
No.
In the minors, or just hold on a little bit?
No. Because if you don't believe that he could be a starter in the bigs, and he goes in like his, you know, gangbusters and in AAA, you know, maybe that's an arm that you can flip at the deadline for a decent like bat.
Sure.
So no, I wouldn't. Like, the starters have way more value than relievers. If you don't think he's going to be a starter in the bigs, I think you just keep him as a starter, use him as trade bait, and then if you have to call him up to the bullpen, you just, all right, let's see if you can take off. I mean, most pitchers start off as starters anyways, and then eventually get transitioned to relievers.
Yeah, I mean,
pretty close to the big leagues.
Josh Hader started as a starter, even.
Abreu.
Chapman.
Yeah. It's
those
a fun game
guys
we're playing here. 713-780-ESPN. Stroll Pool today. What?
Sassy.
Stroll Pool today has an option for. It reminded me of that game where you just go back and forth naming guys.
Oh, well, I mean, that's just like what dudes do.
Right, I know. That's why I said it was a great game. Stroll Pool today has an option for Yordan hits 40 bombs. Let's go. I think it's in play. See if you can give me a root beer, Brian. Brian is not even asking, like, what do we want? He's like, yeah, I want this food. I want this food. I want that food. He didn't even ask us if we wanted anything. You see that?
I saw it.
I'm going to order you a root beer. Settle down. You are sassy. Joe's right.
Eric the buyer, how can y'all do play-by-play on the show if the game doesn't start until 6:05? Joe made me retire the bit, so we can't do that.
Retired.
We can't do it. That was an example of why Paredes should bat in front of Yordan. Works a walk, two on. They don't walk Yordan. Yep, you're right. I agree with you. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Let's talk some college basketball. Brian Barnhart calls the radio play-by-play for the Fighting Illini. Let's talk to Brian Barnhart when we come back. Go beyond enemy lines with Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5, 97.9, live from St. Arnold. First, I've got to tell you about the greatness that is Pro Dunk. Pro Dunk is the very best. They have the highest quality basketball goals in the market. They've been making the highest quality basketball goals since 1984. They got tempered glass backboard for you. Gets you that true, authentic feel off the glass, off the backboard. It is awesome. It's got that breakaway rim, which is great for you as well. You can throw down some jams. You can hang on it. And you're not going to worry about a thing because the breakaway rim is going to keep you safe. They got the extended overhang, too, for all your weak-ankled people. You don't have to worry about rolling your ankle on the basketball stanchion because it's clear and it's out of the way. Also, you can accept that stainless steel hardware. It's rust-proof for you, which is awesome. You have to have that in Houston. And it's height adjustable, anywhere from 5 feet to 10 feet. It is great. Their accessories, top-notch. LED light kits for night play. Backstop, that's pole pad lettering, and lots more. Plus, you got to check out Thor. Thor is awesome. They have the lightning adjust feature on Thor. You can raise and lower the goals with a drill. But they have all the goals, though. They have in-ground adjustable, portable, wall mount, roof mount. They can do it all. And they install that goal for you, too, if you want. You don't have to worry about screwing it up. They install the Pros of Pro Dunk at the perfect height, perfectly straight. So order your goal now. ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. It's Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at the St. Arnold Beer Garden. Here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Big day in Houston sports. Great spot to watch it all, too, right here at St. Arnold, watching the Stros game. Hunter Brown in some traffic. He's in some early traffic. We'll see if he gets out of it. Still no runs at Minute Maid Park. And then you got the basketball at Toyota Center later tonight. The late game, Illinois-Houston. We'll talk to Brian Barnhart, Illinois play-by-play, here shortly. And then also Iowa-Nebraska, the first game. Let's head out to the HRP guest line. Joining us now, Brian Barnhart does radio for the Fighting Illini of Illinois. Brian, thank you for taking a few minutes, hanging out with us on a beautiful day in Houston. Lots going on. This Illinois basketball team, I think, much better than a 3 seed. Maybe some of the injuries midway through the Big Ten, a couple of losses there, might have hurt the resume a little bit. But whenever you hear people talk about Illinois, it's the offense. What makes them so good offensively?
Well, first of all, great to be on. Welcome to the Big Ten Tournament South, a little bit here, right? The three Big Ten teams. But no, it's great to be on. Yeah, offensively, they pass the ball really well. Their spacing is good. They can spread the floor. You know, the 7-foot twins, Ivicic twins, can shoot it from out there. Now, they haven't shot it well lately, but they have that capability. Mirkovic is kind of a point forward. He distributes the ball really well. They just are so efficient offensively, they don't waste a lot of possessions. Where they've been defeated is if they get out-rebounded. They're a really good rebounding team. If the rebounds are fairly close as the game goes on, it's usually a really close game, and they've come up short in a couple of three or four overtime games. But they've been in every game. Offense is not an issue because of their spacing. It's not like they run up and down the floor, but they are just so crisp with their passing. They don't foul defensively a lot. They don't send teams to the line. And they make about 80% of their free throws. So all of those factors kind of result in what, for most of the year, was the number one offense in KenPom in the country.
You know, I got a lot of friends that went to the University of Illinois, and I think back to when John Gross was there, and we talk now about here in Houston about the impact that Kelvin Sampson has had on the Cougars program, but what's it just been like since Brad Underwood took over and really got, you know, Illinois back to where you want that basketball program to go? It feels so much different than it did in the Gross era. More like what it was, more like when Bill Self was there.
Yeah, it's funny because when I started almost 25 years ago, Bill Self was the coach before he left for Kansas. And as a younger broadcaster at the time doing play-by-play, and I grew up in near Champaign, so I'm an Illini fan since I was a little kid. But, you know, I remember all the Lou Henson years, the success that Lon Kruger had. And when I took over the games, you know, we're competing for the Big Ten championship. We're Sweet 16, Elite 8 in 01. You know, Bruce Weber makes it all the way to the championship game in 05. And I just kind of thought this is the way it's always going to be, you know, and you can't take that stuff for granted. As you all in Houston, you know, knew after the 80s and everything that happened there, and then you went through a down period. And so it was, you know, we didn't go to the NCAA tournament for 5 or 6 years in a row. And then Brad comes in the first couple of years he struggles and, you know, rebuilding everything. But since about 2019, 2020, the year that COVID moved in, they were headed for the tournament that year and had great players, Trent Frazier, Kofi Coburn, on down the list. Io DeSumo eventually out of Chicago. And that really got it rolling. And now even in this new era where you're putting together rosters all the time, you know, Brad Underwood has gone overseas. He pulled in these guys from the Balkans. He landed Keaton Wadler, a little bit under the radar player in the state of Kansas. And that combination, he's got one of the best teams he's had this year with the current group.
Being joined by Brian Barnhart, Illinois radio play-by-play. Houston and Illinois coming up at the Toyota Center a little bit later tonight. You know, a lot is made about the offense for Illinois, and just touched on it there. Very good offense. But you look at the numbers, I think underrated defensively, too. Third in the Big Ten in opponent field goal percentage. Third in the Big Ten in opponent three-point percentage. Do you think they're a little underrated on that side of the floor?
Yeah, probably. You know, I think so. The offense gets so much attention. Now, early in the year, November, and of course, teams change, as you guys know, between November and March. But in November and early December, they were struggling defensively. They just weren't very solid. And they kind of changed things up after they lost to Nebraska at home on a buzzer beater. They went and won 12 in a row. And defense was a big part of that run. Now, during that 12-game winning streak they had, Kylan Bosel got hurt, Andre Stojakovic got hurt, and so the numbers slipped a little bit towards the end of that time frame. Another loss at home to Wisconsin in overtime was a key part of that. And then they've been a little more consistent here lately, especially in the tournament. These first two games, they've been outstanding defensively. So, yeah, the numbers have fluctuated a little bit defensively. At one point, I think they were in the top 20 or 25. And it's moved up and down a little bit, defensive efficiency. But they are so good rebounding. They out-rebound opponents by plus 11, plus 10 or 11. They get a lot of offensive rebounds. I know Coach Sampson talked about that quite a bit in his press dealings earlier this week. And so that, you know, their defense, I would agree with you, is underrated to a point. They've had their moments where it hasn't been as good. But their offense has been so good that even in those games where they haven't been as efficient defensively, they've been in just about every game, with the exception of a game with UConn and a game with Michigan.
You mentioned how Wagler was under-recruited out of Kansas. I mean, what did you know about him when he got on campus, and what have you seen that growth from him from when he was there to where he is now? Because he's obviously projected lottery pick and a very, you know, important player for the Illini.
Yeah, he was, it's a great story, and hey, he's a great kid. It's one of those stories, you know, recruiting, there's so much focus on, you know, the four-star, five-star ratings, you know, the circuit that the guys play on, for the summer leagues or the different leagues that there are. And he was kind of just a guy on kind of the back courts, you know, he wasn't on the headliner courts. And when you're not on the headliner courts, then the numbers don't, you know, feed in and people don't pay attention. And so Illinois paid attention. Tyler Underwood, Brad Underwood's son, had a connection to somebody at Oklahoma State when Brad had coached there that was coaching Keaton Wagner. And, you know, this guy kept telling folks that, hey, we've got a player here if you're interested. And only really Illinois and Minnesota were the only two major schools that were interested. Now, teams in the Missouri Valley were interested. There were some other schools that, you know, were taking a look at him, but Illinois was the first major school to jump in and see what an efficient passer he was. But even when he came to Champaign guys in the fall, people were like, well, he'll get some minutes. He'll probably share time to get back up to Kylan Boswell. And then word started coming out of camp that this kid could surprise you. This kid's the real deal, and he just hasn't stopped. I mean, from the opening start of the season, he has been so consistent. He is unrattable. I don't know if that's a word, but he doesn't get rattled. You know, he had the 46 points at Purdue. That got the nation's attention. And then teams have tried pretty much since to try every kind of defense to slow him down. But he doesn't have to score 25 or 30 points. If you look over the last month or so, he's only scored like 20 points or more once because he gets 7 or 8 assists. He gets 5, 6, 7 rebounds. If teams are going to double team him or they're going to try to take him away, he finds teammates. He's kind of like a quarterback, run pass option quarterback, that he takes whatever the defense gives him and makes his teammates better, but he doesn't have to score 35 or 40. Now, certainly if he does, and we might need that in some point here, whether it's tonight or somewhere else, but he's got that capability. But he has been so unflappable, never changes his demeanor, doesn't get frustrated, and he's made himself into a lottery pick.
Yeah, us radio guys can make up our own words, Brian. It's all right. No worries.
Yeah,
Brian, we appreciate the insight. I don't know how to spell it all. We talk for a living. We don't have to know how to spell. But, Brian, appreciate the insight. Thank you so much. We'll see you over here at the arena here pretty soon.
All right. Sounds good.
That's Brian Barnhart, Illinois Radio. Really good Illini team. Really good team. I've seen a lot of people talking about how this is a Final Four type of matchup, and I cannot disagree with them. Let's talk a little bit about the matchup. Let's talk a little bit about the four Sweet 16 matchups coming up tonight, two in Houston, two somewhere else, out in California, actually. We do that when we return. It's Jeremy and Joe live from St. Arnold on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
All right, since 1976, D&M Leasing has been in business, and they open their doors with one mission, making a vehicle easier, smarter, and more affordable than buying it the old-fashioned way. 50 years later, that mission has not changed, but the reason that people come to D&M has only grown. They're tired of negative equity, tired of wasting weekends at dealerships, and tired of paying too much for too little. At D&M, you don't get a rookie. Their average manager has been there for 20 years, salesperson for 10 years. So you're working with someone that knows how to save you money, protect you from depreciation, and design a lease around your life. So if your payments are too high, you're stuck in negative equity, or you just want that smarter way to upgrade, call D&M at 713-290-1000 or visit dmautoleasing.com today.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Oh, okay. No music. Ryan got into a car wreck earlier, and he's immediately putting a car wreck on the radio program. Ryan, I hope you're well. You might not be well after the show, though.
Sorry.
It's Joe and Jeremy out at St. Arnold. Great time. Astros, again, squandering an opportunity. So we all ordered – what are you laughing at, Brian? We all ordered a crawfish roll.
Yeah.
All three of us ordered a crawfish roll.
All ordered the same thing.
They brought one out before the other two.
Yeah,
guess who took it?
Brian.
They
handed it to me because you guys were talking.
The non-talent took the first crawfish roll out here. Can you believe that?
Yeah. I can because you guys have to talk more.
Usually the producer
and I order mine first.
Waits to the very end.
Oh, please.
You know? The producer over here depriving the talent from eating. It's unbelievable.
Oh, Phillip's
here.
Sir.
What's up, Phillip?
Talent,
always good to see you.
Talent,
how you
producer,
doing?
Intern.
I remember. Yeah. Yeah, I was Max Verstappen's my junkie of the day, in fact. We'll get into that a little bit later. But Phillip is here. Phillip, a resident Twitcher, works right across the street. And every time we're over here, he always comes over here and says hello. So good to see you, Phillip. One of the only Twitchers we know in person. All the other ones hide their identity for some reason. 75, smart of J-Bone to get a dark beer so it looks like a root beer. It is a root beer.
It's a root beer.
It is a root beer. I'll let you have a drink of it if you show your ugly face. Joe, if you have a lot of friends who went to Illinois, you should have cheated on their homework. you hear this guy, J-Bone, this is what you sound like when you talk about the Cougs. Is that good or bad?
I thought he was great.
Is that a good or a bad thing? I don't know if that was an insult or like, I don't know if that was a dig or a compliment. Like, I don't know.
I think it was intended to be a dig, but I think it was a compliment because he was very talented.
Yeah,
I enjoyed him.
I don't know.
Great parties in Illinois.
This guy gives me a Dave South vibe. Dave South was a legend. A legend. There goes a man. He's got a man.
You should have emulated his style.
Texas Aggies.
Never say a player's name.
There goes a man. Oh, these look phenomenal. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This looks very good. You don't mind if I just eat this, right?
I'm glad
you go ahead and do the rest of the segment.
Food.
Yeah,
I've
Brian.
Been here since 10 a.m. I don't want to talk about myself.
Yeah, but that was
I was kidding.
The reason you're here at 10 a.m., though, I'm going to have to out you a little bit here. Well, that was partly your fault, Joe.
Well, yeah, the speaker was in my car.
Would you thought we start early today?
No, the speaker was in my car. Oh. So I had to bring it. I had to bring the T-shirts as well.
The good-looking shirts.
Yeah.
Swing on by. We're at St. Arnold, if you haven't noticed. Great spot to watch the ball game. Still no runs in said ball game. Great pregame spot if you're headed over to the basketball a little bit later. It's just a great spot all the time. The food is phenomenal. The cold beer is phenomenal. The cold root beer is phenomenal as well. So he talked about Illinois-Houston. I've watched so much Illinois this
really?
Week. Yeah. I've watched a few of their games. I've listened and have watched and have read every single piece of item or every piece of information about this game. Illinois is good, man.
Do you feel like
Illinois is good?
What was Kelvin saying the other day when he started watching him? He felt like a fan because it's just how much he was enjoying watching them play basketball.
They play offense so well.
Yeah, they're a fun team. I think the games tonight that are here in Houston are very and so are the Texas and Purdue game and the Arkansas and Arizona, but the games here tonight are really interesting. And this matchup, a good offensive team, as you said, they're good on defense too, Illinois. But then you have the Cougs who have more of the experience. And that's what I feel like this game's going to ultimately come down to, is that the Cougs have guys like Sharp who've been there before. They've done that, and that's why I think they're going to get the win tonight.
Yeah, I hope so. If you have Cougar questions, 713-780-ESPN. We're just flying by the seat of our pants today. So you can ask us whatever you want to ask us. You got some basketball questions for the NCAA games today, feel free. I think it's going to be a game for whoever wins the boards. Because Illinois' offense, great, right? Average almost 85 points a game. Their KenPom offensive efficiency, number two in the country. They've been number one at times. You look at their shooting, though, and their shooting's not phenomenal. 47% from the field. That was 10th in the Big Ten. 9th in the Big Ten in three-point shooting at 35%. Now, what's interesting is that they all can make threes. Every single player on their roster can make threes and will shoot threes. From their point guard to their center, from their one through their five, they'll all shoot the threes. The Ivicic twins, mm-hmm. both of them will shoot the threes. Tomislav, 32% shooter. His twin brother, Zvonimir, 29% three-point shooter. So, they will shoot it, and they're both, right around the 30% range, low 30s. So, they'll shoot threes. Mirkovic, yeah. David Mirkovic.
Man, you had to put
Montenegro.
Some work in.
Yeah, a little bit of the pronunciation guide.
There's a lot of bitches in that Illinois lineup.
Yeah, I was watching Illinois? Is it the score? What's the one in Chicago? Is it the score?
Yeah.
I was watching a lot of their clips because they had, Brad Underwood on,
sure.
and they were talking about it. And I was trying to think. One of the guys goes, the Ivicic twins, Mirkovic, Stojakovic, Petrovic. I think they have an itch to win it all. it made me laugh. It was far better than that debacle that Brian just said. But
I was actually copying Granato. That was his joke.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. So now does it sound better?
No, it's better.
Okay.
Yeah,
no,
much better. Right.
Yeah. I think it's worse. I mean, you stole it.
So that's the thing, though.
Because I thought it was funny.
You're not above that.
Well, I thought it was funny. I know I'm not.
So why is Illinois great offensively? It's not because they're a great shooting team. They're a solid shooting team, and they can shoot the three from all over. But whenever you have five guys on the floor who can shoot, they're going to space you out. So they're going to be able to attack you a little bit better, easier, depending on your defenders. But they're a really good offensive rebounding team. They average 13.5 offensive rebounds a game. That led the Big Ten. It's one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the entire country. So if you can limit them to their first shot, which their first shot – okay, pretty good, but they're great offensively because they get offensive rebounds and they don't turn the basketball over, so they get way more shots on goal. So if you can limit their shots on goal, that to me is where the game's going to be won or lost.
What are the Cougs average per game on offensive rebound,
I think it's right around 13-1.
Well, that's what's interesting is because that last game, obviously, the Cougs were A&M.
12-8.
They didn't shoot the ball particularly well to start the game against A&M, but they were just getting board after board after board. So you have two teams that kind of stylistically in that way are similar, where they might not shoot the ball very well, but they're going to get multiple opportunities every single time. So it's just who wins that battle. It might just come down to that tonight. Like how does the Cougs attack the glass, defend the glass to get the win? I mean, I think this is going to be the game of the weekend. I'm not just saying that because you're on the Cougs call, Jeffrey.
Well, I hope it's not the game of the weekend. I mean, I want Houston to win by 20, but I don't disagree with you.
I think it's going to be a really good game tonight.
I don't disagree with you. 713-780-ESPN. If you have some college basketball questions, we're here to answer them. This is your chance. One of the areas that I Actually, I watched an Illinois guy do like breakdowns of the Houston Cougars. Like, he did a tape study basically, and they put it on their website. Like, whatever the Illinois, like, go Cougs is or whatever. It made me actually feel a little bit differently about Bucky McMillan. Like, he was pointing some things out on tape where, like, they're not fundamentally sound and they don't have, like, great, like, plan. It's like, okay.
Yeah, but I see.
That's interesting.
That's interesting, but yes, I can see that as you say that. But you do look at that team, and as we talked about, I mean, their entire team was gone when he took the job. Like, he had to bring in a whole new roster.
Yeah, but it's more scheme stuff.
Okay.
It's more like coached up to a certain scheme, like having great defensive principles, making it easy. Like, but, you know, maybe that's just one guy's opinion. And they were playing a good basketball team.
A great basketball team.
Which exposes you a little bit.
I would just want to see what it looks like with his roster. Because I'm curious about Bucky. Yeah. I think you got three really good coaches right now between the three big programs here in Houston, or in Texas, sorry.
So anyway, so a lot of talk has been about the Illinois offense, right? Number two in KenPom offensive efficiency, Houston's defense, number four in KenPom defensive efficiency. So you have, like, strength on strength, right? A top five offense in the country, top five defense in the country. So that's all everybody's talking about. What I haven't really seen talked about a whole lot is the Houston offense versus the Illinois defense. Like, that really hasn't been a huge breakdown of this game. It's mostly, like, top five offense, top five defense, clash of styles, boom, boom, boom. I've seen very little conversation about Houston offense versus Illinois defense.
Where do you feel like compared to – which one's stronger? Is it the Cougs offense or the Illinois defense?
If you just want KenPom efficiencies, Houston's 10 in KenPom offensive efficiency, Illinois is 24th in defensive efficiency.
Okay.
Here, like, my thought is, like, I think Illinois' offense is great, and I think they have an underrated defense. I think Houston's defense is great, and they have an underrated offense. So it's an interesting clash.
Yeah, well, and what would you prefer to have? Like, that great defense?
A terrible team and a free pass.
Well, yeah, I know. See, I think I like the Cougs side of that more, where the elite defense, underrated offense more. I would just rather rely on my defense in a tournament like this, where everything's kind of a toss-up, every game's different.
Yeah. See, I look at it more from a personnel perspective.
Sure.
Like, I don't really – like, the number is one thing, because it's like two teams are trying to game plan on how they're going to beat the other. So, like, the numbers kind of get thrown out the window a little bit. Illinois defensively, like, you know, solid defense, good defense. I'm very eager to see what Houston's plan is against them. Like, reading some of the little – conversation about, like, what Illinois might try to do is mostly from this guy that did that film study. It's like Illinois like to do drop coverage and pick and rolls. They don't really turn you over,
okay,
but they don't ever foul.
Interesting.
And what they try to do is they force you into bad shots. So, like, they're willing to, like, they're not going to pressure you. They're not going to sit there and try to turn you over. They're not going to, like, reach in, go for steals, because they don't foul and they don't turn teams over, but they force you into very low percentage shots. So they run you off the three-point line. They try to keep you out of the paint. They try to make you settle on the mid-range jumper. So, like, is that an area where Kingston Flemings can get to his mid-range jumper? And if Kingston Flemings is making his mid-range jumper, like, how much does that boost Houston? I think that's an area that I'm looking forward to watching. Like, does Kingston have that mid-range jumper falling? What Houston's offense looks like against Illinois' defense, and then how Houston can handle, you know, this prolific, maybe the best offense in the entire country.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting, just like, as you're saying, like, the style of clashes and of these matchups and what they do and what teams – do well, and the thing is neither team does really anything poorly. Like, they're just good at everything, but also elite at some things. So it's just a really interesting matchup between of who's best is going to outweigh the other one's best. And I do think Kingston's obviously one to watch tonight. The other thing for me that's important is sharpen the foul trouble.
Yeah.
Like you just don't want to have him missing large chunks of game time tonight, because you need that shooting, that ability.
I'll go one further.
Sure.
He's probably going to draw the Wagler assignment.
Is Wagler good on defense?
He's long.
Okay.
So he can defend a bit. But, like, Sharp's going to get the Wagler assignment. Like,
yeah.
They throw a curveball. But Sharp always gets the best score on the other team.
Yeah.
He got DeBonsa. He got Peterson. He always gets the top guard on the other team, so I imagine he's going to be on Wagler. So that's another thing. Like, keeping him on the floor because of his shooting is important, but keeping him on the floor because he's your best perimeter defender, probably more important.
Yeah. As long as he's out there, I think the Cougs have a really good chance in tonight's game. Well, not – of course they have a good chance. They're favored to win the basketball game. But I am curious to see just how Flemings handles this next step, too, against Illinois.
Yeah.
Like, how he handles the pressure of this game. Because we know that in the tournament at this point, this is where teams with elite-level freshmen can be separated from championship contenders to just guys. Like, we know Acuff's probably going to have a good game tonight. I think Fleming will.
Why do you
think
that?
Because it's awesome on offense.
Arizona's awesome on defense.
I know. No, Acuff's terrible on defense, so it'll bounce out throughout the entire game. But I think he's the best offensive player left in the tournament, Acuff.
Yeah. We'll get to some of your college basketball questions, and we'll look at the other three games as well. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, live at St. Arnold. Hunter Brown, got lifted. Got lifted in the fifth. What was his pitch count at?
It was 102.
Okay, that's a good time to lift him.
Blue ball was nasty there.
Was it good morning, good afternoon, good night?
Yeah, I think
they
it
strike
was.
Him out on three pitches?
It looked like it.
I was looking down. So, yeah, so blue ball looked very, very good. That's nice. Still no score, though. Hunter Brown's MO, though. Like, ace, number one, whatever. Like, it's all kind of semantics. It's like words and what stuff. But where can Hunter Brown improve? Where can Hunter Brown get better?
Pitch count.
Going deeper into games.
Yep.
And I understand that they were watching him because it's start number one, but he's still got the pitch count over 100. Like, I wouldn't think
102.
I wouldn't think 102 pitches on opening day, his first start of the year, is 102 pitches in 4 2/3. So it really wasn't them babying him. You know what I mean?
His last spring start was 83. So this is obviously the most he's thrown. I mean, it's honestly, going to 102 is a surprise. You could have argued he shouldn't even have gone out there for the fifth inning.
Right.
But yeah, blue ball was 3 up, 3 down, got the K. Got out of there.
Man.
Loprofito, the only hit for the Astros right now. Great roster choice.
Can I nitpick a little bit?
Sure.
I don't really love three pitch strikeouts.
Okay. Let's explain.
Because you want a first pitch ground out?
No. No.
I didn't know if you're talking about a pitch efficiency.
Now, there's context here.
Okay.
If strike three is a chase, whatever. I don't love throwing a strike on an 0-2 count. Now,
oh,
if you get a chase there,
okay.
Totally okay.
Okay.
You get a chase on an 0-2 count, totally okay.
But if you put one in the zone on 0-2.
I don't think you should throw an 0-2 pitch in the zone ever, quite frankly.
That's fair.
I hate it when it's 3 feet outside. I think it should be competitive. I think it should be a competitive pitch where there's a chance you can get a chase.
Yeah.
But I don't like 0-2 pitches in the strike zone. That's another get-off-my-lawn old man take.
Well, if it wasn't the strike zone, it's because he threw 99 when he got him out.
But I still don't like that. I think it should be up and elevated.
No, I get that. I get that, yeah.
You shouldn't. I don't think you should ever throw an 0-2 pitch in the strike zone.
That makes sense.
Now, if they chase, great. But I think that it should be, you know, a little bit off, baseball up, baseball down, baseball in. Set up your 1-2 pitch. I don't think you should challenge on 0-2. That's just, you know, maybe it's an old man take. I don't know. All right, 713-780-3776. Your college basketball questions. We'll take a look at these other games coming up as well. We'll do that when we come back. Jeremy and Joe, live from St. Arnold, ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2. Tournament is here. It's finally resuming after a long wait, and it is awesome. Tournament is great. Upsets are inevitable. Buzzer beaters are so much fun, and Underdog is the best place to get in on all the action all season long. You can make picks and win money right now in Texas, and it's so easy playing on Underdog. All you have to do is pick whether your favorite players are go higher or lower on a bunch of different stats like points, rebounds, steals, assists, blocks, and much, much more. You know, maybe it's Bennett Sturts at Iowa. Maybe it's Hoiberg's boy at Nebraska, Darius Acuff. Joe's loves Darius Acuff. He thinks he's going to drop 30 against Arizona. Maybe it's your favorite players on Houston, Illinois, Tremont Mark, Sprayton Smith, whoever it might be. Go prove that you know ball on Underdog right now. So easy to do. Just download the Underdog app, and then, you know, maybe you can win a lot of money, too. You know, you can win up to 5,000 times your cash if you get all your picks right. Easy to do. Fun to do. You know ball. Go prove it. Download the Underdog app right now. Use promo code KILLERB, K-I-L-L-E-R-B, and you're going to score $50 in bonus entries when you play your first $5. That's promo code KILLERB, Underdog. Make picks. Win money.
Must be 18 or older and present in Texas. Terms apply. See assets.underdogfantasy.com/web/play-and-get-terms_DFS_DHTML for details. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-MY-RESET or visit www.ncpgambling.org.
Houston's independent voice for sports talk. Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at the St. Arnold Beer Garden. Here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
He's Joe. I'm Jeremy. We are inside of the St. Arnold Beer Garden. Great spot to watch your sports. Great spot to watch the Stros. Great spot to just hang out. Beautiful day. Great spot. Cold beer's fantastic. these crawfish rolls. We all three got crawfish rolls,
yep.
Which is kind of scary that we all got the same thing. But they're very good.
Very good.
You can't find a bad bite in here. Brian was the first to eat all of his because he was the kept the first one.
Ordered it first.
Chivalry is dead here, I think. But anyways, 713-780-ESPN. Junkie, in a college setting like tonight, would you rather have the best offense or best defense?
Defense.
See, I don't. I don't think it's that binary. I don't think it's that rudimentary. Like, no. It's a very. It's just way more than that.
Yeah, no, I agree, but I prefer the defense because I think you also a lot of times get even good offenses, they struggle in the tournament. So I'd rather have the struggles of just having a bad day than your elite defense on top of that just to make it even harder for a team like Illinois or someone else to score. So I always prefer in college the defense.
They say defense travels. Does Kingston need to have a big game for us to win tonight? I wouldn't say need.
No.
But important, sure. It doesn't have to be scoring either. Like, it doesn't have to be he needs 30 for the Cougars to win. I mean, what if he scores 12 but he has 10 assists that lead to 8 threes? Like, I mean, it's so big is relative. And then he has to be good defensively. Like, Illinois has 5 guys that are going to be on the floor at all times because they can go to their – Stojakovic comes off the bench for them. Page's boy. So, like, they all have to defend well. Like, you know, they're going to all have to play good defense. So maybe he doesn't have a great offensive night, but maybe he has his best defensive night of the year.
Which, that'd be great.
So, I mean, relative, sure. I think they all need to play well in order to win. Houston and Illinois. I mean, both teams are Final Four good. Like, Illinois, well, why are they a 3 seed? Well, Illinois lost 4 of 6 in a stretch where they were missing 2 key guys in their rotation. It dings their resume.
Yeah.
That's why you can't really all, pay attention to the seed that often. You know, if they were healthy 100% of the season, then you look at a stretch where they lose 4 of 6, okay, they're gettable. But they were without 2 of their dudes. Like,
yeah.
So that you have to factor that into the equation as well.
And it was all the tournament teams as well, Michigan State, Wisconsin, UCLA, and Michigan. So the only 2 games in that stretch they won were against Indiana, who was on the outside of the bubble, and USC,
yep.
Who was not a tournament team
And
either.
2 were on the road.
Yeah.
Like, two were against top 10 teams on the road. So can't really look at a whole lot like that. 713-780-ESPN, 75, Kingston. Careful how you spell that, 75. Kingston will have a big game because of the Illinois setup. Hope you're right. Kugblaze, he asks, will Houston try to speed up Illinois a little bit? You think we'll play with some tempo on offense tonight? He thinks that the Houston guards can run right past their big guys. See, I was thinking about that myself as I was just thinking about this game. I do wonder if Houston tries to run a bit when they get off. Like, here's the struggle, though. Is that you're going to have to commit everybody to the defensive glass, right? Like, Illinois is going to offensive rebound like crazy. Mm-hmm. So you have to commit everybody to the glass, which if you commit everybody to the glass, it does slow you down getting into the break. But do I think Houston will try to run, even though when they send 5 to the glass? I do think that they're going to try to run and score a little bit so they don't have to, rely so much on the half-court offense. I do think that they will, but I also say that knowing that Houston's going to have to commit 5 to the defensive boards.
Yeah, they might try to run early maybe, and then – if it's not going well, Kelvin Sampson will pivot, or maybe the other way. Who's one of the players that maybe we haven't talked about yet that you think is the most important guy tonight? Is it Sanak? Is it Mercy?
Probably David Mirkovich.
Okay,
like how Houston handles him. Like if he went nuts in their game against Penn, he had 29 points and 17 rebounds. He's huge, 6'9", 250. He's got some guard skills. So like how you defend him, I think is going to be important.
Which one's 23? 23 years old? I can't remember.
I don't know their ages.
Well, one of the European guys is a 23-year-old freshman.
Probably Mirkovich.
Yeah.
Because the Ivicicis are both international, too. All 3 of those guys have played professionally. The Ivicic twins, they both played at SC Derby.
Okay.
Mirkovich played European professional ball. Like they're huge. they're big dudes. 7'1", 255, 7'2", 250, 6'9", 250. So, like, if your mind is, like, we're going to get out and run, well, then you're going to allow a lot of offensive rebounds.
Yeah.
So you have to – it's kind of, two-step plan, right? Make sure you get the board, then run after that, which it helps if your guards rebound, though. Fleming's can get it on the glass, he can grab and go. If Uzan can get some rebounds, he can grab and go. Sharp gets some rebounds, he can grab and go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be fun there. Sanak – the rebounding's big there. He's Houston's leading rebounder. So, like, how can you limit a good offensive rebounding team? Your best rebounder gets lots of rebounds, right? So that's going to be critical, boxing out, that sort of thing. that'll be critical. How about these other games? Texas plays Purdue. That's the first game tonight. Purdue 8.5-point favorite there.
I like Texas just because I don't like Purdue.
Really?
Yeah, they just annoy me.
It feels like you have a little bit of take lock on Purdue.
Yeah, I'm locked into Purdue.
Didn't you pick them to be one and done in the tournament?
Why do you hate them?
I don't know. It's just one of those. I've only had a couple people from that went to Purdue, and they all annoyed me.
See, I think Purdue advances tonight. I think this ends the ride. This is the Cinderella story's over.
Yeah, I'm also a big Texas fan, so I want to make sure, you know, hook them all the way.
Are you?
Yeah.
There's a
it just annoys Brian.
First game in Houston, Nebraska, Iowa. Well, I mean, Brian's pretty much the same amount of fan of you are.
That's true. This game.
No, I actually have the T-shirt.
I have a T-shirt.
Brian, I mean, Joe can get a T-shirt.
I have a T-shirt.
It's not that hard to get the T-shirt.
I got it from a player on the team. I got a T-shirt.
Oh, what a brag.
This game's going to be fun, Nebraska and Iowa.
Yeah, I don't know which way to go on this.
No, I don't either.
I think they're the same. Caliber. They're the same caliber.
Yeah, I know that there's a 4 versus 9 seed difference here, but Iowa, they play very similar to the way Nebraska's played a lot this year.
Yeah, it's 4-9 seed, but Nebraska's only a 1.5-point favorite, and I think that the season series is tied at a game apiece. Yeah. Nebraska won at home by 9, and they lost on the road by 5. I want to say this 9-point game went to OT. It did. So, Nebraska won a home game in overtime. Nebraska lost on the road by a couple of possessions. It's a coin flip.
It is. And Iowa played terribly. I think what this looks like, about they won three of their last 9 games in the regular season and into the Big Ten tournament. And now they're playing really well in March Madness. But I'm going to guess Nebraska tonight. I think it's 1.5 for Nebraska right now. So it's projected to be a close game. But I'll take the Cornhuskers just because.
The Cornhuskers. I'm very eager to see what the crowd looks like, too. Nebraska fans took over Oklahoma City last week. So I'm curious to see what the Toyota Center looks like tonight.
It's going to be very red.
I mean, I don't sleep on Iowa and Illinois. I saw an Illinois fan somewhere around here.
Right here.
Oh, yeah. There you go. So, yeah, don't sleep on them either. Big Ten fan bases travel. And then the only other game we haven't talked about, number 1 seed Arizona in the West region, 4 seed Arkansas, Wildcats 7.5-point favorites, Darius Acuff, of course, for the Razorbacks. Arizona's loaded. I mean, Bradley, Big 12 Player of the Year, Burry's talented freshman, probably a lottery pick. You got Koa Pete, freshman, probably a lottery pick. Creesa, their big center. Karchinkoff, who's one of those 28-year-old freshman. Mm-hmm. They're loaded.
I'm taking Arkansas because I love Acuff.
Okay.
I like Acuff, and I like the experience from their coach. So I'm just rolling with Arkansas. This just feels like their tournament right now. Just to keep it rolling, elite-level play that you're getting from him night in, night out.
You don't
out,
believe so. Any of this.
Yes, I do.
No, you don't.
I love Acuff.
You don't believe Texas is going to win?
No, I don't believe Texas is going to win.
Then why is he saying it, you think?
I do like Arkansas. I love Acuff.
You're picking Arkansas. If we were at a casino, you would put money on Arkansas to win.
Yeah, plus 7.5, yeah.
No. That's plus 7.5. I'm talking money line.
You said at a casino.
How much do you like Acuff? We can play money line at the casino.
I know, but he said to win.
He's my dream for the Bulls.
Oh,
that's why I like Acuff.
Oh, there it is. There had to be something there.
No, I think Arizona wins this game comfortably.
If I can get the 7.5, I'll make a wager with you.
That's not what I'm talking about. You said they're going to win.
Well, I think they're going to win. But what are the odds for money line? I don't know what the money line odds are. But
I mean, if it's minus 7.5, it's probably what, plus 310?
Something plus 250 to 310, somewhere in there.
Right?
I'd imagine, yeah.
I think Arizona's too tough. I think Arizona's good. Arizona plays so good offensively. Arkansas, not the best defensive team.
No.
I think Arizona's going to find some advantage. Plus, they're 1 through 5, they hurt you. 1 through 5, they hurt you. So I think they're going to find some matchups that are advantageous for them. And then they play so hard defensively, and then they're very good defensively. So Acuff still might get his, but I think is anyone else?
It's kind of like Arizona's what happened to BYU in their first game where DeBonsa was going nuts, but BYU was just kind of bad everywhere else. That's the way to stop Arkansas, it seems like.
Arizona's the best team I've seen Houston play all year, in person, all that. I think Illinois is very similar.
Is it a wide margin from Arizona to the next team?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So even with Iowa State?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I like Iowa State a lot too, though.
Yeah.
Sometimes I can get a little bit of blinders on for my Big 12 schools, though, so maybe I overrate the Big 12 slightly because I've seen them in person and I fall in love with their teams a little bit more.
Well, yeah, but you just said it's still a wide margin.
I saw Arkansas too,
Arizona and Iowa State, so.
Yeah, I would say it's pretty significant.
Okay.
Because I think Arizona is just lethal 1 through 6. 1 through 7. I forgot about Del Orso. I mean, 1 through 7, they can hurt you. Iowa State, after their Big 3, there's a bit of a drop-off there. Whereas Arizona's 1 through 7, boom, dude. Iowa State's dude. Good player, young player with promise, drop off.
Well, and your best player for Iowa State is, what they said, questionable or game time decision?
Well, yeah, I mean, if we're talking specifically about tonight's game, I don't know. I haven't seen the latest on Jefferson.
Last I saw was just the game time decision for him.
I think they can win tomorrow without him against Tennessee. I think they desperately need him against Michigan. Yeah. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's cash or trash when we come back. What are you cashing? What are you trashing? 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 975-979-HD2. I'm cashing Ownwell. In fact, you can save cash with Ownwell. That's right. They're going to save you money on your property taxes. Property taxes keep going up. It is annoying, but it is a part of life. Now, you can fight those property taxes, and I would recommend that you do, but I wouldn't do it on your own. I would use Ownwell, ownwell.com. In fact, I do use Ownwell. They saved me money last year. I can't wait to see the process this year, how much money they saved me. And it's so easy. Last year, you just go to the websites. This year, no different. Head to the website, fill out some information. They're going to email you every step along the way. And then you don't pay until they save you money. It's risk-free. You owe nothing up front. You don't pay until Ownwell saves you money. It's great. It's my favorite thing about them. But new customers, you can expect to save on average $774 a year by signing up. They have an 88% success rate in reducing property taxes. Shows you how good they are at their job. Also, you can join the 140,000 Houston properties that already use Ownwell. So you're in great company. 140,000 Houstonians, 60,000 property owners switched to using Ownwell last year, and they have lowered property taxes on more than a half a million Texas. You can be one of them as well. So do not wait. Deadline to protest is May 15th for most counties. Save money on your property taxes with Ownwell. Sign up in less than 3 minutes at ownwell.com. That's ownwell.com, and let them know Branham sent you when you complete your sign up at ownwell.com.
ESPN 97.5.